Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. Meet Başak Aoğlu. You've got a big role in her story. You do. Welcome to All the Wonders, the Children's Book Podcast. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 357 of the podcast with Başak Aoğlu. Başak's debut picture book is called The Almost Impossible Thing, and in it she explores the idea of ideas. Let me clarify. Başak's story is about a bunny with a dream, and another bunny in another place with the same dream, and another. For me, it's about how dreams and ideas alike feel personal, and in some cases feel like lone pursuits, but others may be having similar dreams, all unbeknownst of one another. And the story is one that I've been thinking on and thinking on. Başak has captured the ephemeral quality of dreams in The Almost Impossible Thing, leaving room in her story for the dreamer to, in fact, find him or herself. It's quite a wonder. Here's episode number 357 of the podcast with Başak Aoğlu. Welcome to the podcast, Başak Aoğlu. I'm so excited. And congratulations on your debut.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be on your podcast.
Everything is exciting. It all is. Yeah. I was saying before recording, I was nervous to talk to you. I've been so much anticipating the release of The Almost Impossible Thing because it has that quality to it that I feel just sets it apart. It's something that because you're talking about ideas and you're talking about invention and the creative spirit, there's so much here that feels like you, that feels like who I picture you to be as an artist.
That's so nice to hear. Thanks for saying that.
Oh my goodness, of course. Okay. I actually, though, before I pour out too many of my own feelings, I would love to hear your story, Başak. I'd love to know, how are you describing The Almost Impossible Thing to people when you say, hey, I've made a debut? How are you sharing this with them?
I know this whole book was an almost impossible thing for me in general, and that was kind of the inspiration behind it too. I'm from Turkey. I'll tell you a little bit about myself.
Please do.
Because it's kind of interesting. I'm from Turkey and I moved to New York 10 years ago. And I studied fashion design and did that. I was a fashion designer for women's wear for 8 years in New York.
Really? Competitive business?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, from what I know from watching Project Runway.
That was my life. And then 2 years ago, I decided I didn't want to do it anymore. So And I loved children's books and illustrations always, and I did that a lot on the side. So then I knew I wanted to travel. And so I got a one-way ticket to Nepal and then traveled for a few months by myself. And then I found myself back in Turkey and didn't know what to do because I wasn't confident enough. Like, just, I couldn't say I wanted to do children's books from fashion to that. You know, I didn't even study illustration. And then one day, like, I didn't even know where I wanted to live. And then I got an email from my publisher, now my editor, saying, like, if you're in New York, I'd love to have coffee with you and, like, talk future projects.
Wait, how? Were you sending out postcards? Yeah. Was your art online?
No.
I know you've got Instagram followers. You've got stuff, but that's amazing.
Yeah, because I post my stuff. Like, I put stuff out there.
Yeah.
And I think it's such a good thing to do. That's my advice for everyone. Like, put your stuff out there. People look at it, and it's good. So Michael Green, who's my amazing editor, and I knew his work and I like admired him. So he was like, do you want to have coffee? And I was like, yes. And I actually came to New York.
So you were like, hold on. I was just in New York. Now I'm in Turkey. Let me just come back to New York.
Yeah, I'm like, to have coffee with you. This is crazy. So I came to New York to have coffee with Michael, and I'm so glad I did.
Wow.
So, yeah.
What a like, trip for coffee.
Yeah.
When you came back, did you just stay back in New York, or are you... You're in New York now.
Yeah, now I'm in New York. I wanted to come back to New York anyways, and this was, like, such a good opportunity.
It was good timing. You were wandering around Nepal for who knows how long, and this was the right time to come back.
Yes, exactly.
Wow. Yeah. Just putting
That's
your art
of
out
how
there.
It happened, yeah.
I've heard from other art directors. I've had art directors on that have shared that when they're looking for work, they absolutely look on Twitter, look on Instagram, putting your art out there. It's a quality that you are able to do as an illustrator that is not something I'm able to do as a writer. But,
yeah, that's the thing.
But
I guess our advantage.
Well, I don't know if it's an advantage. I was going to ask you about that because there are all of these other people putting stuff out there. I have to compete mentally with all of the books that I read and love and go, okay, how am I going to weigh up to these other books? And ultimately, you know, the answer is you make your own thing and you know that you're in competition with yourself, not with anyone else. But I don't
this
have
is
to...
so true. I think like comparing yourself to other people is the very... I was reading this article about like today and it was saying... don't think like a silver medal winner in Olympics. Like, think as a bronze medal. Think like you won the bronze medal because it's like when you're a silver medal winner, you lost with a second. But when you're a bronze medal winner, you won with a sec. Like, you won an Olympic medal with 1 second. That's like such a positive.
Yeah, like, you medaled. Because the person below
you
didn't. Yeah,
like bronze. Yeah, bronze. So I think like comparing yourself with the gold medalist is always like so drowning.
I am totally keeping that. That is an amazing analogy.
Yeah, it's just like comforting to think that way. Well,
and with that attitude, then I can imagine how that helps you. I love following artists because it's something that we all love to watch. It's beautiful. We love to see beauty in the world. But I am in a critique group with a group of artists, and I know that it can be, you can get inside your own head when you're seeing how many likes does my art get versus this other person, or just I think that art becomes an easier thing perhaps to compare yourself to others pre-publishing. I don't have much to compare myself to pre-publishing, but art is in that physical space. And so finding your voice and just knowing your voice
it's tough because like sometimes I get like I like think of an idea and then I'm like, oh, like was this been done? Like I don't
oh,
like
yeah.
There's so much out there, and I'm like, this is such a good idea. Like, this is so creative. But then I'm like, oh, like someone must have done this before.
Oh,
And
my
then
word.
it's like an interesting thing.
It's completely interesting, Bajaj, and it turns out it's exactly what your book is about. I see how you're saying you wrote a book about you wrestling with this process.
Yeah.
So in The Almost Impossible Thing, we see a cast of rabbits who are all trying, they're all aiming for the same goal, which I think is something that is so common. And I like that you take it on that way. In your story, it's not a story about one individual who has a singular dream that goes after it. It's a shared dream. It's not only a shared dream, but it's many processes, many approaches to the same big idea. In this case, to flight. These rabbits want to fly, but they don't, they're not aware of one another. They are just on their own journey toward the same goal.
Yeah, and then when they come together and join their forces, amazing things happen. I think everyone must have an experience kind of similar to that. I was just thinking of this the other day, even like the Women's March in, I went to the Women's March in New York.
Yeah.
And that was so amazing, like seeing everyone together, you know, it's just like so much more powerful. So even like that kind of reminded me of the story I was working on.
Yes, even how beautiful to be reminded that you're not marching alone. You are all together, and there's strength in working together. And sharing the same idea doesn't have to be a bad thing. It doesn't, I mean, initially I thought as I was seeing this or on maybe one of the read-throughs, I was thinking, well, if you take the literal race for flight, it was a competition to be the first person into the air. But you've sort of spun that here, Bashak.
Yeah.
You've made it that we can do this together. We can accomplish something greater if we work on it together. And I have to say, I love your text. I really wrestled with your text, with how sparse it is and how on point it is.
Thank you so much. I need to give credit to my editor, like Michael Green, my editor on this. He really like kind of directed this text in the like right way, I think. Because it's very unexpected. It's not.
Yeah.
And I really like that. I really like that, like, it starts with, I don't know.
It's beautiful. Do you mind if I read?
Thank
you. Do you mind if I read some of it? It's so it's so beautiful. And I will read it much faster than I read this story, because you can't read this text without enjoying your beautiful illustration. But for the sake of the people listening, it begins, "Once upon a time, there was a dream. A dream that tried to take shape. The dream didn't know that it had no shape. Or that others couldn't see it at all." And then the line that I love here, "unless it was kept in a tiny box and never moved from its place in the closet where sunlight couldn't reach it, the dream knew none of this." That there, the idea that the nature of an idea as seen from different angles, the way that sometimes ideas need to wait, sometimes ideas need to be focused. Sometimes we don't, an idea comes to us, but we don't quite know what it is. We just know that it's there.
Yeah.
Oy, goodness. I thought I've never read anything like this before. But then I thought, how on point that your text.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah, it dances around so much. What great editing as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I was kind of nervous because it is kind of an abstract text.
Yes.
It is unusual, but I also like the fact that it is unusual and it is kind of like unexpected. So, yeah, I'm glad you like it.
I think actually that it, in its abstraction, it allows for many interpretations. That to me is, as text alone, not in ideas, as text alone, that's something I feel very, very different from what I've read before in picture books. I've read a lot of picture books that are open to how you would behave in the situation of the character, or how you interpret the end of the story or something like that. But to carry the abstraction all the way to the idea of what the text is trying to convey is something so beautiful, and I think so necessary for what you're trying to convey. When I read it, I can feel an openness in the text, and in an odd way, I can feel an openness inside me to trying to understand what is the text trying to tell me.
Yeah, it makes you think, and that was what we were aiming for. And the audience, like the person who's reading, it has a big role in the story, as you said. And I think like that was so important to me to like make a book where I can collaborate with the reader, you know, like on the story.
Oh, I love that notion that you're collaborating with that. Wow.
Yeah, because you like when you're reading it and looking at the pictures, like you're putting an effort into it too. Like you're reading it and like observing the picture and then like thinking about it, right? Like, I don't know. So, yeah.
I think absolutely. I think that, I think that though what's interesting, and you and I were talking about this before we started recording, you're a debut picture book author and illustrator. This book will come out, from when we're talking, it will come out tomorrow. Yeah. And you have not yet had that experience of a reader reading your book sort of alone. I mean, maybe you shared an early copy of the book, but as far as a reader finding it on a bookshelf for themselves and reading it and having that solitary experience, that isn't something that you've had yet, or I think it's probably something that not many people get to witness, because it happens, like it'll happen in my library and you'll have no idea unless I tell you what happens.
Yeah.
But
I'll
usually
probably go to Barnes and Noble and spy on people. Like, just like
I need
spend a day there.
I need that series of photos on Instagram spying on readers in the
world. And like sunglasses and just watch people.
with the collar popped up, yeah.
This is happening.
Yes, and yeah, this will definitely an Instagram thread. I love it. But where I was going to draw a connection here, again, which is sort of in a different way, is that when a book comes out, typically, you know, you say you've poured this portion of yourself into the story, but after it releases, it becomes the reader's to interpret the way they want to. Yeah. But it almost becomes the reader's alone. You don't have interaction with it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But again, in this book, there's room for them to talk. And I'm even picturing them talking to you. I'm picturing when you have these story times that will be coming up in your future, you're sharing. When you have these school visits, or when you're in front of children talking, I can see that you've deliberately left space for them to communicate what they think the text means, and they'll be right no matter how different the answers are. And that I can't I'm sorry, I'm wrestling with this because I don't understand how you accomplish this.
Like, there is no wrong way to get like some people also like, you know how all the bunnies come together, like then you realize that all the bunnies were different bunnies and they come together and join forces. And
I'm so glad
I had a friend who thought that it still was that one bunny.
The same bunny,
but like kind of excelled in like so many things and then like brought all these abilities together and then like flew as one. And I'm okay with that too. I'm like, yeah, that's a nice way. I mean, I don't like that works for me too.
It's quite beautiful.
Even though I didn't think of it that way.
No, my friend Mel and I were saying before the recording, but Mel and I had these two different, but I think both affecting reads of this story that reading it one way as the same bunny trying different things and ultimately succeeding through all of those tries combined together. So almost symbolically at the end of the, I should name some of these things, of the jumping on a trampoline or jumping from a trapeze or attaching wings or doing these different efforts like that. And we also read it as, well, look at the different props that we're laying here, though, that we have wings, we have these aviator goggles, these studious blue glasses, that there is enough room there for the answer just to be yes. Was it all of that.
Yeah, those props were for that fact.
Just yes, you're doing it yourself. Yes.
It's so nice to talk about it with someone who looked at the book and like thought through it. It's so exciting for me right now.
Oh, Bashak, I poured over this book. I studied this book. It was a treat. It was a book that, if you read the text outright, you might have maybe 100 words, so I could read it in less than a minute. But yet, the idea and the core of the story beckons for it to just be lived with for some time. It's beautiful. Okay. How did you... Let me jump to your art, because I don't want to miss a chance to ask you about that. How did you make the art in this book? In the beginning, it looks like collage work. It looks like you're working in a...
I did a bunch of things. This whole book was such an experiment for me too. Like, everything I did, I was kind of doing for the first time. And it was so much fun. It's quite simple. So I wanted to have a lot of textures in the stuff I put on the spreads.
Yeah.
Since they're, like, I love white and, like, open space in spreads. The character is quite simple, too. So I wanted to like have the mountains to have the texture and the ground to have some texture. So it's collage and some block printing and some stamps I did, and all this nice stuff.
And so you're working in traditional medium then? Are you composing things digitally too?
No, I do everything by hand and then scan them in, and I use very like minimal Photoshop. I just color correct and clean stuff out.
That's pretty. I like it. I also like that the bird flying around, the swirly waves. I feel like we have that color pencil.
Yeah.
It was so exciting. Those like crayon type pencils that are the blended, the blue, yellow, red. Oh yeah. Oh, I felt like, oh, I have that one.
Yeah. Good eye.
No doubt. It actually is a neat New York connection, I suppose, because that pencil that we have came from a friend got it for me from one of those fancy pencil stores in New York. I can't remember which one it was, but I'm sure you know the one I'm talking about.
Yeah, probably. I got mine from Amsterdam, and then middle of the book, I lost that pencil. And I was calling my mom, she lives in Amsterdam half the time, in a year. I was like, Mom, you have to find this same exact pencil. And then I somehow found it again online. Thank God.
That's amazing. Mom, save me with a pencil. That's going to cost 4 times as much to ship to me as the pencil costs itself.
Yeah, I get my studio gets a bit messy when I work. It's a lot of mixed media stuff.
I like the idea of picturing all of this coming out by hand, especially in the notion of playing with ideas and trying different things. That in the book, again, we see you trying different things. We see the collage and we see the pencil and the paint, and we see it all mixing together here, together, working as one, really.
The whole point was to have fun. I wanted to make sure that I was having fun making this book. and like because and like failing and then retrying something new and then failing again and then like doing, but I just wanted to make sure like all of it was fun and good times.
It's beautiful. And let me tell you, the page when you get to the idea coming together, I really loved the way you pulled this off. To describe it to people, here's how it looks to me. On the page, all of the rabbits are walking toward a central point, which is sort of a giant drawing of all of them.
Yeah,
making this an airplane assembly. But the thing that to me struck so hard was that the whole background, because we're on grass, is awash in this neon green. And it felt like that expression of the light bulb coming on. It felt like, aha! Oh.
It does look kind of like that.
Well, to have all these like a good soft point. Sort of blue tones leading up to it.
Suddenly that bright, yeah.
Yeah, it was nice. I liked it. It was a great effect.
Thank you. That's sweet.
Well, I'm glad to see that this came out the way it did and to know that you were able to wrestle with your process but then find a way to make the process the core, the voice of the book, because I think that will allow it to speak to readers in a unique way as well. Mm-hmm. It was a really, it's a cool thing that you accomplished there, Bashak. I'm excited to
Thank
know.
You so much.
Oh, of course. I'm excited to know then from here, I assume you're already at work on whatever the next book is. What ideas have been coming to you next? What are you working on next?
Now I'm working on a board book. I didn't write it. I'm just illustrating it, but it's so much fun. It's like, since it's a board book, it's kind of like bolder and a lot of colors, and it's just like so much fun to work on.
I could see your aesthetic lending itself very well to those youngest readers. I have one of those readers in my house. I have a 2-year-old. We love board books, and the ones she connects with the most are often the ones that graphically, I think, read the strongest.
I think so. Like those are the ones I like also.
Yeah. Are you able to share any other details? Can you share who wrote the book?
Her name is Megan Merchant, and it's basically a story of it's kind of like a mom panda's like love letter to her baby.
Aww.
So yeah, it's a really cute poetic story, kind of.
Fun. Well, congratulations on that.
Very sweet. Thank you.
Yeah.
Pandas. It's like, I'm all about pandas.
Really? Do you have a favorite thing to draw? You were all about drawing animals in this book. It was great.
Yeah, I love drawing animals. I love that one simple face, and then I can change the body up a little bit and then change the ears, and it's like a totally new character.
Your line is so fun. It looked like the way you drew bunnies in The Almost Impossible Thing felt to me like you were working in clay. I don't know how else to describe it other than there were these lines you were just drawing out, like the ears are just stretched out and the arms and the body. You made them fluid in that way that it just felt like it felt as though they were formed from one ball of modeling clay or something.
I love That's that. Funny.
Yeah.
Thank you, I don't know, like when I draw these animals, I want to keep them simple. I want to make sure that like a 4-year-old kid can look at it and kind of like draw a similar version of it.
Okay, yeah, this is a rectangle and two lines.
Yeah, and then because like I remember when I was a kid looking at like books, I loved looking at stuff that was like that I felt like I could also draw this too. You know, that's like kind of encouraging.
Well, so you grew up in Turkey.
Yeah.
Until you said about 10 years ago, right? You lived in Turkey. What were children's books like growing up for you? Were you reading many books that were translated from America? Were you also reading Turkish books?
Yeah, it was so hard to like find any good, like there weren't any good Turkish picture books.
No.
But I remember like I had some friends whose parents would go overseas a lot. And then they would bring back English like picture books, and I remember those like moments when I go for like sleepovers looking at those books, because like we didn't have any. It was like so amazing to me, like these amazing like beautiful books, just like beautiful pictures and stuff.
Yeah.
So I didn't have much access, honestly.
But you fell in love with them that way, though, it sounds. That's great. Something that you coveted.
Yeah, it was kind of precious to me.
I like that. How was school in Turkey in that way of incorporating children's literature? Then I would imagine it would be different than we in the States are so accustomed to.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe even now more than even when I grew up. I think you and I are close to the same age. But I know now we try to incorporate read-alouds in as many different facets of learning as
beautiful.
We can in science and in social studies and in the library and everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have, was school rich with children's literature when you were growing up?
Not really, unfortunately. It wasn't. I think it's getting much better now. It's getting a fraction, but back then, I just don't remember. When it was summer and we were off school, my mom would like bring me great books and I'd read those, but I don't like associate those with school at
okay.
all.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like an off school activity.
Well, maybe that's just how it was when you grew up and
things
are changing and you'll see that.
Yeah, it's definitely changing for sure.
Cool.
But, yeah.
And now Now you're the one writing the book, so now you go back home, bring copies of your books for the school.
I know, that's what I'm going to do, actually. I need, like, a luggage full of books.
I love that. Do they have plans yet, or have you heard yet of the book being sold and translated to any other languages yet?
No, not yet.
I don't know how that, I mean, that's sort of I understand that when you sell...
Yeah.
A book you sell foreign rights. So I understand that concept. And, I'm familiar with like the Bologna Children's Book Festival and other ones like that where books are sold to other countries.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, I know it sometimes can be a mystery even to the person creating the book itself. So
yeah, for sure. Like for me, it's a huge mystery. I'm like learning everything right now for the first time.
Well, there you go. But you grew up reading, it sounds like, in Turkish and in English, so bring back...
Yeah, I went to an American middle school and high school. Like, actually, all my teachers were American.
Oh, okay.
Which is interesting, but yeah. So yeah, all my classes were in English.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. That was helpful.
I think you need to come back here again, and I just need to hear, like, the childhood story. I feel like there's so much to unravel, and I'm watching your time going, okay, I've already kept it for a lot of time, but I have a million billion questions about growing up in a different country. So that might need to be something that we save for another day if you would ever treat me to that. I would appreciate
yes,
that.
Yes, of course. I'd love that.
Well, regardless, I'm glad, Başak, that we connected because of this gorgeous book that you made. And I'm glad that you're able to that love that you had of children's books growing up. I'm glad that you are able to, I don't know, even just, I guess that the road led you to creating one now out of fashion into working for children. What a beautiful, beautiful thing.
Nice. Yeah. I'm so happy.
Before,
thank you, Matthew.
Oh, my goodness. Of course, please. It's my honor. The honor is all mine. Before I let you go, I'd love to bring you back to the classroom though, back to the library and give you a chance to share some words with those readers that will be discovering this book. So I'll see a library full of children tomorrow morning. Is there a message, Başak, that I can bring to them from you?
Of course. Okay, this message isn't about books, but I'd say, hey, kids. this is something I've been thinking about a lot these past like couple of weeks. So I'd say if you ever get scared of something, just remember the fact that bears are scared of little dogs and little dogs are scared of vacuum cleaners. So maybe what you're scared of is actually not that scary at all.
podcast is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland. You can subscribe to the podcast and access the archive of over 350 episodes at All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com and check out other podcasts from All the Wonders, including the Picture Booking Podcast with Nick Patton, a semi-weekly podcast about picture books and the people who make them, and Books Between, a podcast hosted by Karina Allen, helping to connect kids ages 8 to 12 and their parents, teachers, and librarians with the books they'll love. Our theme music is by Emily Arrow. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect any ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referenced. Listeners, if this episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment on allthewonders.com or rate the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that's a very good thing indeed. Coming up on the podcast, Shayna Corey and R. Gregory Christie share A Time to Act, John F. Kennedy's Big Speech, a new picture book from North South Books. See you then, and thanks for listening. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.